I don't know if you know who Arianna Paquette is, but she has some interesting reasons for leaving MSNBC. Personal news, Why I'm Now Leaving MSNBC by Arianna Paquette. Just quit. That's the advice Alec gave a year and a half ago when I expressed concerns about my job. You just quit, it's that simple. Stay at MSNBC at least until the midterms, Jeffrey said a couple years back. He advised to watch and see what happens. Hang in there, you're needed, Elizabeth recommended last winter. I was in your shoes when I was younger, but I stuck it out. A year and a half ago, simply quitting my job without knowing my next step sounded pretty radical. So I stuck it out a bit longer until we were in the middle of a pandemic to make a truly radical move. July 24th was my last day at MSNBC. I don't know what I'm going to do next exactly, but I simply couldn't stay there anymore. My colleagues are very smart people with good intentions. The problem is the job itself. It forces skilled journalists to make bad decisions on a daily basis. How Jimmy Dore would put it, it forces journalists to sell out on a daily basis. You may not watch MSNBC. I try not to. But just know that this problem still affects you too. All the commercial networks function the same, and no doubt that content seeps into your social media feed one way or the other. It's possible that I'm more sensitive to the editorial process due to my background in public radio, where no decision I ever witnessed was predicated on how a topic or guest would rate. The longer I was at MSNBC, the more I saw such choices. It's practically baked into the editorial process, and those decisions affect news content every day. Likewise, it's taboo to discuss how the rating scheme distorts content, or it's simply taken for granted, because everyone in the commercial broadcast news industry is doing the exact same thing. It's a fact, Jack. But behind closed doors, industry leaders will admit the damage that's being done. We are a cancer, and there is no cure, a successful and insightful TV veteran said to me. But if you could find a cure, it would change the world. This is me talking. I wish the cure could be that we would just tell everyone and they would stop watching. It's a vicious circle because we can't tell everyone to stop watching unless we told them to stop watching on mainstream media. The independent media would need to build something so big that it could compete with the mainstream media and supplant it. If that ever happens, it will be after a colossal fight. Back to the story. As it is, this cancer stokes national division even in the middle of a civil rights crisis. The model blocks diversity of thought and content because the networks have incentive to amplify fringe voices and events at the expense of others, all because it pumps up the ratings. I'm going to jump back in here. I could wait until the end, but this is a good place to say it. It isn't only about ratings. One group is the news reporters, the rank-and-file news reporters. And then you have the corporate media executives who are getting paid. They're not the owners. And then you have the owners. Now, the executives want to make a profit. They watch the ratings. They skew the news content in the way that Arianna is describing here. And they are a cancer. What she isn't saying is that the owners would be willing to work at a loss as long as they knew that they could keep the masses down. The owners will do anything to kill unions. The owners will do anything to disempower the workers. The owners will do anything to keep the peasants working in their fields, to keep the slaves working in their fields. And Arianna won't address that anywhere in her article, I'll just tell you right now. So not only are these journalists selling out because of ratings, they're also selling out because they do what their owners tell them to. In Bernie Sanders' case, there were stories that would have made money. There were stories that would have had good ratings. But those stories were killed for the sake of keeping the huddled masses down where they belong. If you had to compare the relative harm of the two kinds of cancer, the ratings cancer is less damaging than the keeping the masses down cancer. Back to the story. This cancer risks human lives even in the middle of a pandemic. The primary focus quickly became what Donald Trump was doing, poorly, to address the crisis rather than the science itself. As new details have become available about antibodies, a vaccine, or how COVID actually spreads, producers still want to focus on the politics. important facts or studies get buried. This cancer risks our democracy even in the middle of a presidential election. Any discussion about the election usually focuses on Donald Trump, not Joe Biden, a repeat offense from 2016. Trump smothers out all other coverage. Also important is to ensure citizens can vote by mail this year, but I've watched that topic get ignored or killed numerous times. Context and factual data are often considered too cumbersome for the audience. There may be some truth to that. Our education system really should improve the critical thinking skills of Americans. But another hard truth is that it is the job of journalists to teach and inform, which means they might need to figure out a better way to do that. Yeah, they all need to figure out how to get paid and still tell the truth. That was me, if you didn't notice. They could contemplate more creative methods for captivating an audience. Just about anything would improve the current process, which can be pretty rudimentary. Think basing today's content on whatever rated well yesterday, or look to see what's trending online today. Occasionally, the producers will choose to do a topic or story without regard for how they think it will rate, but that is the exception, not the rule. Due to the simple structure of the industry, the desire to charge more money for commercials, as well as the ratings bonuses that top-tier decision makers earn, they always relapse into their old profitable programming habits. I understand that the journalistic process is largely subjective and any group of individuals may justify a different set of priorities on any given day. Therefore, it's particularly notable to me, for one, that nearly every rundown at the network basically is the same hour after hour. And two, they use this subjective nature of the news to justify economically beneficial decisions. I've even heard producers deny their role as journalists. A very capable senior producer once said, "Our viewers don't really consider us the news. They come to us for comfort." Again, personally, I don't think the people need to change. I think the job itself needs to change. There is a better way to do this. I'm not so cynical to think that we are absolutely doomed, though we are on that path. I know we can find a cure. If we can figure out how to send a man to the moon, if Alex Trebek can defy the odds with stage 4 pancreatic cancer, and if Harry Reid can actually overcome pancreatic cancer, he's now cancer-free, then we can fix this too. I'll step in here and say that we can only fix it if we take the media away from the moguls, but beyond that, we need to take the money away from the moguls. We need to have no more moguls. That would fix it. Back to the story. Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced. I know James Baldwin wasn't thinking about MSNBC when he wrote that line in 1962, but those words spoke loudly to me in the summer of 2020. Unfortunately, many of the same ailments are still at stake today. Now, maybe we can't really change the inherently broken structure of broadcast news, but I know for certain that it won't change unless we actually face it in public and at least try to change it. Through this pandemic and the surreal, alienating lockdown, I've witnessed many people question their lives and what they're doing with their time on this planet. I reckon I'm one of those people looking for greater meaning and truth. As much as I love my life in New York City and really don't want to leave, I feel fortunate to be able to return to Virginia in the near term to reconnect with family, friends, and a community of independent journalists. I'm both nervous and excited about this change. Thanks to COVID-19, I'm learning to live with uncertainty. And so very soon, I'm going to be seeking you out, any one of you who also may sense that the news is fundamentally flawed and is frustrated by it. This effort will start informally, but I hope to crystallize a plan for when better, safer days are upon us. On that front, feel free to reach out anytime if you would like to discuss any of this, whether in agreement or not. More than ever, I'm craving a full and civil discourse. Until next time, thank you for reading. I wish you all well. Ariana. Okay, Ariana, I'm going to tweet this episode to you with the request that we talk about it further on my show. I hope that your invitation was meant in good faith. Ariana mentioned this article, so I'm going to read it too. There's no antagonist. News outlets mull the possible end of their editorial and business side Trump bump bonanza. You have to admit, that's a pretty intriguing title. It had been more than a decade since the New York Times launched a brand advertising campaign, but 2017 felt like the right moment. The Times was under daily assault from President Trump, whose long-running obsession with his hometown paper had become a constant crusade to rebrand the Times as fake news. Debuting at the Academy Awards, The Truth is Hard offered a not-so-subtle advertising rebuttal, crescendoing with black and white text affirming the Times' commitment to the truth. In 24 hours, the paper reportedly garnered more subscribers than it had in the prior 6 weeks. The ad offered an example of a key media lesson of the past 4 years. Redefining yourself for the Trump era makes for good business. Ask the Times, CNN, MSNBC, or the Washington Post. Now, media companies are staring down a different kind of truth. Coronavirus is raging, the country's economic picture looks bleak, and the president seems poised for defeat in November, or whenever they finish counting the votes. The Trump moment, a boon for TV ratings, web traffic, video views, retweets, and for a sense of journalistic purpose, could be coming to a close at a perilous time in the media business. The advertising market has been crushed with layoffs, furloughs, and cutbacks felt across the industry. In place of Trump, the defining story of a media generation would likely be a much more conventional and comparatively boring situation, President Joe Biden. What would go away is the bad guy in the story. There's no antagonist. So what are we tuning in for? Said Jonathan Klein, the former president of CNN. Grandpa is a nice guy. Everybody might be relieved not to watch as much cable news anymore and go find a book to read, a garden to plant, or a socially distanced walk to take. Klein knows how presidential transitions impact the media environment. Following the passionate viewer enthusiasm for Barack Obama's 2008 campaign and election, Klein was ousted from CNN in 2010 amid low primetime ratings and, in his opinion, post-election viewer fatigue during the financial crisis. It's good that my dear viewers and listeners never get viewer fatigue. We're a plucky crew. The same might be true in 2021. What Trump gave journalistic outlets was an audience that felt the urgency, he said. Certainly, if Trump loses, that urgency among 70% of the audience might dissipate a little bit, but you're still going to be in the midst of an economic calamity, this wrenching social debate over inequality, and have a disease that may be killing tens of thousands of people a week. The conventional wisdom is that the Trump bump juiced ratings for cable news outlets and traffic for online publishers, and while that is true, the Trump years have also dovetailed with changing trends in the media business. Media companies, big and small, have been on the hunt for direct consumer revenue as the Facebook-infused traffic era and pivot to video came to a close. Scale for scale's sake became increasingly out of favor, with publishers seeking to diversify their revenue streams into things like commerce and subscriptions. For news publishers, the Trump circus provided not only a steady stream of content and a target for important investigative reporting, but a fresh enticement to lure in consumers to their paid products. The Times, for instance, reported this week that total digital revenue exceeded print revenue for the first time ever. Outlets expanded their political reporting teams, delivering frequent, explosive stories about everything from Trump's tangled finances to the Russia investigation to the chaotic government response to the coronavirus pandemic and the ensuing economic slide into recession. This goes back to what Ariana was saying about ratings. The Russia investigation, the Russia hoax, the Russia conspiracy theory was about ratings, but it was also about fooling all of us into thinking that Russia is behind everything that's wrong with this country. It's not unfair to say the media's default posture is to be Trump skeptic, said Peter Hamby, the host of Good Luck America on Snapchat and a former CNN reporter. I think a lot of consumers have confused ideas about journalism and think it's supposed to be resistance-y. The Times gets twisted up by this because they are a subscriber business. Indeed, journalists tend to be uncomfortable with the opposition framing, but some media businesses that have been on the receiving end of Trump's ire have nevertheless leaned into the moment with a marketing approach ranging from heavy-handed to explicit. In 2017, the Washington Post, a frequent target of Trump's Twitter feed, unveiled its new slogan, "Democracy Dies in Darkness." Then there was CNN. "This is an apple," read the copy from the cable news network's ad campaign the same year. "They might scream banana, banana, banana over and over again. They might put banana in all caps. You might even start to believe that this is a banana, but it's not. This is an apple." So all this is to say that these campaigns were in direct opposition to what Donald Trump was saying on Twitter. The ad represented CNN's self-perception in the Trump era, telling it like it is in the face of falsehoods. But anyone watching the network regularly already saw its comfort with keeping itself as part of the story, even if competitors winced at some of the more performative duels between the network and president. For years, the president recast CNN as the centerpiece in his aggressive fake news campaign, and CNN relished the attention while feigning indignation. Hour after hour, panels dissected the latest political fracas. Hosts with furrowed brows challenged White House officials, and the programming mostly hinged on one or two big stories rather than an around-the-world news roundup. "I don't think it was any more complicated than that Trump was good for ratings," said another former CNN executive who requested anonymity. That, of course, raises the question whether the end of the Trump era would present, for CNN and perhaps all of cable news, a crisis both in ratings and identity. Identity, that's funny. This is me. I think it's hilarious that Trump has given CNN its identity. I hope they're proud of that. Back to the story. Make no mistake, it's a symbiotic relationship. The dramatic rise and relevance of CNN, for better or worse, is tied to Donald Trump, the former executive said. One company, however, that will likely be just fine, Fox News. Despite the president finding faults with Fox, the conservative network has been a reliable ally throughout his first term, especially via its primetime lineup. The most watched network has hit record ratings, but Fox is equally comfortable in opposition, like during the Obama years, and would likely shift smoothly into Biden bashing mode. The audience has always felt embattled, whether they are in power in terms of the presidency or out of power, said one former Fox News executive. Trump won, but never for one day did they feel that they were in power. The potential audience issue, this executive said, would be if Trump starts a rival network in his post-presidency, an idea he reportedly toyed with in 2016 when it looked like he would lose. Fox and CNN both declined to comment. A theoretical Biden presidency would also offer plenty of ammunition to the growing cadre of influential, vocal, left-leaning media outlets on the other side of the media spectrum, who largely backed Bernie Sanders' 2020 run and would seek to push a President Biden to the left. "They're not talking about me, obviously. For one thing, I'm not influential. And for the other, I would rather have no Biden-Harris presidency at all. At this point, I think my goal is to stage a bloody coup." Yeah, we already know there's no hope of pushing President Biden to the left. Back to the story. In a vacuum, you'd say Joe Biden's presidency is going to be boring and nobody is going to care. I don't think that's necessarily true for partisan media, liberal or conservative, said Chris Balfe, CEO of The First, a new digital streaming network for conservatives. Even if Trump has an atypical post-presidency, like his atypical presidency, it's unclear what kind of media staying power he would have. It's going to be harder for all types of media to put importance on his tweets when he's a former president, Balfe said. Now here's the reason I read you this article in the first place. It's time for an enormous caveat. Trump could win again. The media fervor could continue, or maybe not. Nobody really knows anything these days, and don't expect media executives to make any grand political predictions in public anytime soon. They are too scarred from 2016. Nevertheless, in private, the fact remains that the media world is increasingly thinking about a post-Trump landscape and the end of one of the most insane feeding frenzies in modern journalism history. It's only been a few years, for example, since the wild early days of the administration helped propel an increasing number of contributors to CNN and MSNBC who offered tens of thousands of dollars or more to lock up media types for exclusive deals to speak on their airwaves. I didn't know that. They were offering lucrative contracts to media types for exclusive deals to speak on their airwaves. Well, that doesn't sound shady at all, does it? But according to people familiar with the matter, MSNBC News has recently sought to change its contract structure toward paying contributors per appearance instead of through blanket deals. An NBC spokesperson declined to comment. Those in the TV world have read that change to mean the era of juicy panel gigs and rosters full of various Russia experts has come to a close. Thank God. The next phase is uncertain, but there isn't going to be an arms race for Joe Biden TV analysts, said one reporter with a TV contract. So I suppose now you can see the obvious conclusion to these two articles if you're coming at it from our perspective. You shouldn't watch MSNBC. You shouldn't watch CNN. You shouldn't watch Fox News. You shouldn't read the New York Times, and you shouldn't read the Washington Post. Otherwise, you're gonna get triped like this. Americans have no more illusions about the stakes of this election. Opinion by Paul Waldman, purveyor of fake news. One advantage for Democrats of having a virtual convention this year is that they don't risk a repeat of 2016 when Bernie or bust Sanders supporters did everything in their power to express their disgruntlement that their candidate was not the party's nominee. They were expressing their disgruntlement that their candidate had been cheated out of the nomination. But Paul doesn't want to tell you that. It got so bad that at one point they booed Bernie Sanders himself when he told them they had to stop Donald Trump. This is me again. All this focus on Donald Trump from the mainstream media have made it easy to make him the bogeyman. It's really easy to make Joe Biden look better than he is when they've made Trump look worse than he is. Back to the story. That will not happen this time around. In fact, now that Democrats have a complete ticket, they're looking more ready than ever to fill out their ballots. And they're not alone. Oh, dude. On Thursday, the Pew Research Center released new data about the election, including this extraordinary graph. It's an extraordinary graph. More voters say it really matters who wins the presidency than at any point in the last 20 years. What this graph tells you is that everyone should stop watching mainstream media. Thank you, President Trump, for showing Americans the stakes of presidential elections. No, thank you, mainstream media, for scaring Americans into thinking that Donald Trump is Mussolini and Hitler rolled into one person. I don't have the stomach to read you this whole article. I'll link to it so you can read it if you care to. But this next part is important. If you care enough about politics to be reading this article, you probably thought, of course it really matters who wins. Just look around. So the thought that immediately entered my head is, okay, I'm gonna go outside now. I'm gonna look up my street. Okay, now I'm gonna look down my street. Oh, I can see my neighbors mowing their lawn. Oh, look at that cute puppy. What am I supposed to see when I look around? I'm not going to really understand much about the political landscape from looking around. What looking around means is hooking yourself up intravenously to mainstream media. That's what look around means in the context of this article. That, dear viewers and listeners, is what we need to stop. We need people to pull the IV out. We need people to look around by realizing that there are other sources of information than mainstream media. This episode has given you a pile of reasons to turn off your cable news and to cancel your subscriptions to the New York Times and the Washington Post. If, like me, you are insanely disappointed at how they treated Bernie in both election cycles, then you'll have to admit that the reason democracy lost this time around is because of what Americans are consuming in terms of media. We won't be able to stage strikes and protests unless we get around the media blockade. We won't be able to coordinate our efforts unless we figure out how to get the information around that blockade. People only have so much time to consume media. Until we get them to stop consuming the mainstream media, they won't have time to consume our media. We've been learning in sound bites for far too long, and unless we get some depth to our information, we're not going to know how to fix this shit.